Good evening. My name is Marcus Pitts. I'm 28 years old. Today is April 22nd, 2018. I am recording this interview in Limerick, Pennsylvania, alongside my big brother. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Martel Pitts.
We're here.
33 years old.
33 years old. We're here on the eve of a very special day. Today we have the pleasure of speaking with our mom, Linda Pitts, whose birthday is in a couple of hours. Happy birthday, Mom.
Thank you.
How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling okay. A little nervous about this interview, even though you want to call it a conversation.
Yeah,
but it's
just a normal conversation back and forth. How are you feeling about your birthday?
You know, that's a good question. I've been thinking about that. And 58... The number 58 has really been, like, kind of bothering me. And I can't figure out why. But I've been, like, contemplating it in my mind. Like, wow, I'm going to be 58. All the other past years, you know, 57, 56, hey, I was okay. But something about that 5'8", I can't put my finger on it. But it, yeah.
Is the number 8, or is it because it's, like, closer to 60?
I don't know. Maybe that could be it.
Yeah.
But it's really like.
But you don't look 58, woman.
God. No, thank
you. Not at all.
But yeah, that number's been bothering me, and I was just playing it in the back of my mind. Why is it bothering me? But I can't put actual finger on it. So maybe that.
Did somebody pass away at that age? Are you close?
No. Mm-mm. It could be because I'm getting closer to 60.
Most likely. Mm-hmm. 60. Well, let's take it back a little bit.
Okay.
To start it off with childhood. Can you tell us a little bit about your childhood experience, where you grew up, your close friends, things of that nature?
Well, I grew up in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Grew up in a part of the town that what they called the Inlet.
Why'd they call it the Inlet?
I guess because it's... You know, it's the end of Atlantic City and close to the water. I don't know. I'm just assuming. Started out on Melrose Avenue. Remember living on Vermont Avenue, New Jersey Avenue. We seemed to, like, moved around a lot, you know, during my childhood. I know my mom and dad, they separated for a while, and mom and, you know, was dating another guy, and we... also had a store. We had two stores. One was on the corner of Drexel, Connecticut. It was like a little 5 and 10 store, like, you know, candy and stuff like that. And then on Melrose Avenue, we had like a semi-store restaurant where mom actually cooked, made subs and barbecue ribs and stuff like that. So we
had
a business.
Like your first job? Did you work there?
No. No, it wasn't my first job. My first job was at McLean's Guest House Restaurant at 14 years old.
14.
Yeah.
What did you do?
I was a waitress / maid /
everything.
/ everything, because she made us do everything. Like on Monday after the people checked out Sunday night, we used to come and have to strip the beds and take the linen and stuff to the laundromat. You know, wash it, fold it, come back and iron it, clean up the broom. So, and guess how much I made a week?
$40.
$40 a week. $40 a week.
And you work what? How many hours a day?
I work from
just right after
open.
School?
No, this was summertime. Open to closing.
Okay.
So I was there all day. So basically I was doing slave labor, you might as well say, because you know darn well. Plus tips, you got tips.
I mean, at 14 years old, a lot of people weren't even working.
I know.
I remember when I was 14, I was dying to work and nobody would hire me because I was under the age.
Yeah. I think the only reason she hired, my mother used to work for her and she knew the family, she just gave me. That was my first job, was McLean's Guest House Restaurant. Wow. Yeah.
So what about, like, as far as best friends, are you still close with people you grew up with?
Well, I think I started with calling people best friends when we got to like high school. I still have a group of girls that I consider my best friend. You know, there's Hope, there's Bridget, there's Teal. We were close in high school. Still communicate today. We may not see each other for months or years, but they still my girls, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can still pick up the phone and we can have a conversation, and it's just like I saw them yesterday.
That's good. That's rare.
Yeah.
Did you have like a nickname growing up? Like that they called you?
I remember the older adults, they used to call me Puddin.
Puddin?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Like
don't
the food?
Yeah. Don't ask me why, because I don't know. But if I was to hear today, I would know it would be somebody from Atlantic City that
Puddin.
Knew. Yeah, Puddin.
And that went all the way up to high school? They called you Puddin?
Yeah, but it wasn't my friends. These were adults, like,
oh, okay.
That knew my mom. Now, only name I had in high school, and this was just a funny name that me and another girl came up with, was Pizza. And sometimes when I talk to her on Facebook, Pizza. I'll say, hey, Pizza, what's happening? And how we got that name, we were in biology together. And our biology teacher came in one day with one of those tablecloth-looking shirts on that you go in the Italian
like
restaurant.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
And so we started calling each other Pizza. But as far as that, that's it. No
Pizza and Puddin.
Pizza and Puddin.
That's funny.
Yeah.
You mentioned your mom and dad separated. Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit on that? And you also mentioned you moved around a little bit. Was that just locally in Atlantic City?
Yeah, that was locally in Atlantic City. Yeah. Okay.
And what age were you when they kind of separated?
When they separated? I had to be, I think about in third grade. Somewhere like in elementary school, because I remember during the summers my dad would come and get me, and he would always take me to the beach. Yeah, my dad was a popper, was a Rolling Stone, okay, wherever he laid his hat. So you know, he was, you know, messing around, and I don't know, for some reason or another they separated, and like I said, dad would come get us and, you know, keep me in the summer. Mom was working, and eventually they did get back together.
And how did they reconcile?
I couldn't even tell you. I don't know. I just know
one day
he was back home. I don't know. One day he was back home. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember Sam, Mr. Sam, you know, living with my mom. That's when we had the store and everything. And I remember the lady that Daddy dated, because I remember times that when we used to go up to Philly to visit Uncle Duke in the hospital, I remember her going with us a couple of times. What y'all don't know, Uncle Duke really shouldn't be here. He was very sick as a little boy, and he was in the hospital in Philly. I can't even tell you what it was, but he wasn't supposed to make it past 12.
Wow.
So we used to go up. I remember going up to the hospital, and at that time, kids couldn't go into the hospital, so they would go in, and I would have to stand outside by myself, and I would wave to him from the outside.
Hmm.
Yeah.
How long was he in the hospital?
Maybe I'm gonna say his up through his teenage high school years. That's why he's not as. His disability is not where it should be, because he spent so much time in the hospital that he didn't get the schooling that he should have. So,
that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So from 12 to the teenager, that's a long period.
Mm-hmm.
Never knew that.
Mm-hmm. So looking back on your childhood, how has your life been different than how you like imagined it would be when you were young? Like, did you have like a dream or as a little girl?
I think I always thought of myself as being a teacher, and that's what I became. I think back then, the way we were raised, you always thought you're gonna get a job, you're gonna get married, you're gonna have a family. I mean, the basic normal thing is what we were raised on. So basically that's exactly what I did. Was, you know, only thing I could say was different, I think I was the first one in my family to go to college. My mom and dad didn't go to college. Uncle Duke didn't go to college. So that was a different achievement than my parents.
Yeah, I feel like for our generation, the quote-unquote millennials, that stereotypical go to school, get married, have kids, it's kind of like shifting away. Like, we're starting to do that later on in life, like late 20s, early 30s, instead of like the early 20s in her generation.
And that's like what I wish I had done.
You wish you would have waited?
I wish I had waited. Because I look at you now, it's like, wow, I wish I could have been single at 28, you know, carefree, you know, traveling the world. One thing I do regret, I didn't have the opportunity to live on my own. I went from my parents' house to college with three other roommates, back home to my parents' house, and then I married your father. I never had that living on my own. So sometimes when I come in here, I'm like, yeah,
I have some of the same regrets as well.
You do?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
As far as you wish you would have waited longer?
Yeah, I wish I would have waited until 30-something to have a kid and get married and also live on my own, because I've never lived on my own.
Yeah. And you wish you would have, like, traveled more? Or?
Definitely. Definitely. It's not too late. I'm planning on doing that now. And start with the cruise in January.
Are you still going?
Hell yeah.
And where's it going?
Turks and Caicos, Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, and Puerto Rico.
That's a good little trip.
Yeah.
Well, going back to your teaching career, you mentioned, let me ask, how did you pick that profession?
Yeah.
Like, did you have a teacher in school that kind of you looked up to?
I did, but I think, again, coming up with parents that didn't go to college, and the only thing you actually saw in the neighborhood was you saw a teacher and, I don't know, whatever else profession. You only saw certain professions. I didn't know anything about being an engineer or being, you know, all these professions you hear nowadays. I didn't know anything about that. I saw what I saw, and I saw a teacher, and it was one teacher. I loved her to death. She was my third grade teacher. Her name was Mrs. C.A. And I remember I loved that teacher so much that I would get in trouble just so she would make me sit by her at her desk.
Never heard that.
Yeah. I would get in trouble, and she's like, okay, Linda, you need to come up here, pull your desk up here next to mine. That's how much I love Mrs. C.A.
Did you keep in contact with her?
No, I know she's passed on now, but no, I didn't keep contact with her.
So what are some of, like, your hopes and dreams for the future? Do you see yourself retiring soon, or and what do you see yourself doing after retirement?
I'm ready to retire, and I'm ready to retire because of just the politics and stuff that's going on. You're not allowed to teach anymore. It's all about, you know, making sure the kids are ready for the test, making sure you're doing this. It's so much. If I had to do it over again, I would never go into teaching.
You don't think back and, like, think about all the lives you impacted or shifted. That's a big deal.
I know it's a big deal, but the headaches, I don't know, it seems like it's starting to weigh down on maybe the lives I have impacted. It's just so frustrating to go in there and feel unappreciated. Not just by the kids, but by parents, by administrators. They look at us like, you know, we should be the ones, we're the ones that are shaping the future, okay? Mm-hmm. Every other profession has to come through us. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like they appreciate teachers anymore. That they don't value us. And when you have that kind of feeling, that means it must be time to step out.
Yeah, I can understand that. But have you ever followed up with students maybe 10 years or 15 years down the line to see how, like, how they're doing and how you made an impact?
Yeah. I've had students that have come back to me all the time, and they've, you know, shared things like, Miss Pitts, you know, thank you for being hard on me. Thank you for, And that does give you that warm and fuzzy feeling. But then, after the warm and fuzzy feeling is gone, you back to the same old thing. Yeah, I have kids that, you know, have written me letters saying, you know, thank you for this, that. And I'm like, oh, God, yeah, I made a difference. Wow. But then you go back in there the next day, and I'm like, oh, damn, they're kicking us in the ass again over something stupid. I think I'm really am tired, and I'm ready to come out. I'm ready to, like, just enjoy the rest of my life, retire, get me a little job, maybe babysitting a couple little kids or something, putting them on the, you know, I think I'm ready.
I mean, I don't know how, like, school administration works, but would they let teachers take a full year off and then come back? Is that even possible?
It depends if you have the time in. You have to have the sick time or the whatever time that you be able to, especially if you want to get paid, if you still want to make a salary.
I wasn't thinking about getting paid during a year free? Off. Yeah, just take a year off, like to just kind of recalibrate.
Would you rather move up, like as far as like a vice principal or principal?
I feel like that's more work.
You can see.
But it's more money, though.
It's more money, but their day does not end at 2:45. Their day does not start at 7:15. I'm giving you a perfect example. Our assistant principal, I really feel sorry for her. She's a single woman. I guarantee she's probably at school right now. She's in there almost about 6 o'clock in the morning till maybe 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And they don't appreciate her. They got to go do football games. They got to do the dances. They got to do everything. I'm talking about high school stuff. Yeah. They have to be there. Like if we had for example, their prom is coming up. All the principals in every school have to work that prom. Okay,
yeah,
football
why?
Game.
Most
that's
time they
that's
have like
part
a
of that's part of
that.
Requirement. Well, I'm talking Coatesville.
It's school district.
I'm telling you, they work sun up to sun down, and I don't even think they're appreciated anymore.
So going back to teaching, what do you think the most important lesson you've learned on the job teaching and just in life in general?
On the job teaching.
Or just in life in general?
I guess in life general is to always do your best. Always put your best foot forward, no matter what it is. I don't care if you are the custodian and you're cleaning the bathrooms. Always give it your best. And that's what I try to tell my kids. I said, I don't care what job you end up in. You need to always give it your best. All right? Don't give, 10%, give it 110%. Give it your best.
I feel like you instilled that in us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm not going to lie. In high school, I didn't give my best. Like, I feel like I could have got straight A's if I really tried.
I thought I did.
But, I don't know. I kind of just coasted.
You graduated honor roll, right?
Yeah, but I could have got better grades. I think so. But, what are you most proudest of your teaching career?
In my teaching career?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's go back when my kids come back or I hear somebody say that you know, I really made a difference in their life. I think that makes me proud because sometimes I'm kind of shocked. Sometimes I feel like I'm not making a difference. For example, this school year, we have a whole new curriculum that I just a whole new curriculum where I think that I'm not reaching my kids. But for example, when they took that PSSA test in DLA last week, and I heard one of the teachers say, "Pitts, do you have so and so in your class?" I was like, "Yeah." She said, "You should have saw what she did on that writing part. She had her rough draft, she had her introduction, she had her body, she had her conclusion. I was like, she did? She said, yeah, she was kicked. So
she
stuff like
it.
That, you know,
yeah.
When I'm thinking I'm not making a difference and then I hear from somebody else that, you know, my student did this or a student comes back and say, hey, Ms. Pitts, this is where I'm at. I'm like, damn, they were listening. I did do a little something.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this before. You definitely made a difference on me. from a teacher's perspective. So I remember growing up, I think it was middle school and like early high school, we used to do those like reading challenges. You would give me like five books in the summer to read, and I had to do like a book report on them. And that just kind of added fumes to, like, now I love reading. I never loved reading until we started to do those challenges. So that was a big...
I don't love reading, but...
Yeah, I love reading. I never thought I would say that until after the fact, but... switching it up to family. And could you tell us a story of how you met Dad?
Okay.
Like the very first time you saw him, like, across the room or something.
Okay. All right. I don't know if you guys know, your dad was very popular in high school. He was the class president junior and senior year. He was on the basketball team. He was in the choir.
How was he on the basketball team? He was good enough for the basketball
team. He was good. That was good.
Yeah. Shot behind his head. I don't know.
So anyhow, we met in choir because we were in choir together.
Okay.
And I like your father because, you know, he was
arrogant,
a ladies man. You know, everybody wanted to date Jeffrey Pitts. I ain't have time for him. I'm a senior. He's a sophomore. I ain't got time for you, little boy. And so he would just, you know, just flirt. So I didn't date him in high school, but I knew him in high school. I knew about him, knew, you know, that all the girls liked him and all that stuff. We didn't start dating until, I think it was my sophomore year in college. And he happened to be over Uncle Durham's house. And I went next door, and he was like, hey, you want to go to a movie? I was like, oh, sure. Because, I mean, I was attracted to him, but I wasn't... You know, I didn't want to date him.
How was Dad and Uncle Dorman
friends? They connected.
They hung out together in this. We all had these social clubs in high school, and so they were in the same social club together. So they hung out that way. So that's how
Uncle Dorman's younger than you.
Yeah, by 2 years. And Daddy and him were the same.
Okay.
Age. So they ran around together because of the social club they were in. Everybody was in different social clubs back in the day.
Okay.
Yeah. So he asked me out on a date, and
you remember what movie it was?
Yes, I do.
Really?
It was a Star Wars movie.
Oh God!
It was a Star Wars movie. Yeah. And he had this little red little hoopty car that we went in. Yeah. Went to the movie.
Star Wars.
Wow. Yeah.
Did he pay for you?
Yeah.
I believe he did. I don't know.
He picked you up?
Yeah.
Y'all go to dinner?
No, I think we just went to the movies. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So kiss goodnight?
Probably did, because your father was nasty. He was nasty. And plus, he was still talking to Teresa. Teresa was going to Howard. Your father was at Drexel. And I was at William Patterson, and he would sneak up every now and then to William Patterson and stuff. Okay. And so, yeah, we just started.
So from that point on, did you guys continue seeing each other?
Yeah, because I gave him an ultimatum. I said, look, what you going to do here? I said, you can't keep running up here to William Patterson. Are you dating me or are you dating Teresa? He was like, no, I'm done with her. And I was like, all right. I wrote him a letter. He had those letters for a while. I don't know whatever happened to him.
I think I wrote one of those.
Yeah, I was like, you need to make up your mind. What you gonna do here?
So fast forward a little bit. How did you know he was the one that you were gonna marry him?
Oh, how did I know? I don't know.
Or how long did you date before it kind of popped in your head for the first time? Like, maybe I could marry this guy.
Or was it me that got you?
I think it was you. I think it was you. I know, because we got married in 85. You were born in 84. So, I don't know how I knew that I wanted to marry him. I remember him asking me to marry him. And we were in my bedroom at Baccarat when he proposed. But I think I was a little scared because Neen didn't see me as the one for her son. Okay, because I was a girl from Baccarat, from the projects. She didn't like me at first. I want y'all to know.
Wait.
Yeah.
You told me that before.
So, yeah.
So Neen didn't live. Where did Neen live?
Neen was still living uptown, Connecticut Avenue. And
uptown was considered what?
Still uptown, the ghetto. But I think she looked at her son as finding a girl better than someone from the projects. Hmm. Yeah, she didn't like me. Oh. And I never forget when I was pregnant with you, her saying the comment. I think it was after you were born to make sure that you were a Pitts.
Oh, wow.
Yep. I ain't gonna never forget that. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took a while for them to
usually does when it comes to mothers.
Kind
to
accept me.
So, hey, actually, y'all should say hi. We have,
what's your name?
Melina.
Nani.
And Nani.
What's your name?
At the table. Say hi.
Say hi. Say louder.
Hi.
Nani, say hi.
Hi.
I'm circling back.
I want to have a baby.
What was it like for him to pass away in the way that he did?
I remember that night so clear.
So do I.
Wait.
We had Daddy had made dinner, and he went upstairs to relax, and we were upstairs, and he was saying that, you know, his stomach was hurting, and I remember he saying, "Linda, tell the boys don't eat that food." I think he had made spaghetti. Don't eat that food because I think it may be something wrong with it. And I asked him. I said, "Well, you want to go to the emergency room?" He was like, no. Just get me, you know, a ginger ale, you know, get me something to drink and I'll be fine. So I got him something to drink and he drank it. And he said, you know, I said, I'm going to go downstairs to clean up the kitchen. And he came down and he said, I'm just going to walk. And he walked out there and that's when we heard the boom. And he fell out on the floor. And I remember screaming to y'all to call 911, 911. And they worked on him, and I was just thinking, Lord.
Was it the food?
No, he had a heart attack. I was like, Lord, you can't take this man from me, because what am I going to do? How am I going to raise these boys? I can't raise them on my own. And I was angry. When he died, I was angry with God. I was angry with myself, because I said, if I had made him go to the hospital, that maybe he would stay. So I blame myself. No, I blame God for a long time.
Oh. Yeah, I remember that night vividly.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard because I didn't understand. Why now, God? Why?
Dad?
So, yeah, it took me a long time to understand God works, you know, what his will was. But I always remember your dad saying that he didn't think he would have lived to see 30, like 30. So he said, I shouldn't be living right now. He used to say that all the time.
Why do you think he said that?
I think because, you know, the crowd, where he grew up, you know, where, you know, people he hung out with, things like that, that he didn't see himself making it past 36. But yeah, I was really angry with God and myself.
Me too. I've been angry with God for a while.
What do you miss most about him?
I think that's his silly behind smile.
Mm-hmm. You know, that cheesy smile.
That cheesy smile. And he was just, his presence. He could walk into a room.
Commands the room.
And never meet a stranger. Somebody he'd never seen before and just start a conversation and just go. And I always like, wow, I wish I could do that. Just meet somebody and just have a total conversation with them, you know. Yeah, he had a personality that was just out of this world.
Mm-hmm.
Out of this world.
On a much lighter note, could you tell us about the first time you knew you were going to be a mom? You found out you were pregnant with Marcel.
Oh, Lord, where was I? I don't know where I was, but your dad was still in college.
Were and you I was shocked, worried, I was, happy, excited?
I was working at Caesars. At that point, I was like, I'm 24 years old. I'm
24.
Having. Yeah, I had one. I said, you know what? I'm pregnant. I'm having a baby. So I remember calling him and telling, I said, Jeff, you're going to be a daddy.
You called him? And it wasn't a face to face?
No, because he was still at school. He was still like in college. Yeah. I said, you're going to be a daddy. So
that's how you said it?
I don't know if I said it like that, but I know I remember calling. And I was like, well, it's going to be. You might just break it to your family. I don't broke it to my mother.
What was his reaction?
Yeah.
I don't even remember what was his reaction. I don't know. I guess he was happy or probably scared or one. That's
true.
I don't know.
Okay, how you doing?
But I guess that once both families got off over the initial shock, everybody was kind of excited because this was the first grand on both sides. And you know, I never forget, we were going on this bus trip. Aunt B was on the bus and everything. I think we were going to Cowtown or something. And I was starting the show. And she was like, yeah, this is the one going to make me a great aunt and all this stuff. And they were starting to get used to it. Yeah, they were starting to get used to it. Like, she ain't going nowhere, so. Yeah.
Actually, let me ask you. Being the oldest of, how many cousins we got?
Yeah.
Eight? I'll be sending them. I got to send them to everybody, though.
So I'm not going to be one. Tamara, G, Tony, Kyra,
and Tahir. Eight of us?
Eight, yeah.
Okay, so as the oldest, did you ever feel like a pressure like to set the bar high? So everybody, because I know I looked up to you as a brother, and I don't want to speak for our cousin, but they probably looked up to you as well.
I don't think I ever felt pressure to set the bar or anything. No, not really. No, not at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of the fact that we were the only boys in the family and we were surrounded by all these women.
Oh, yeah, I do admit, I do feel pressure since you already have two nieces to carry on the Pitts last name.
Don't be a choice. I'm still going to try.
Oh, you still going?
Yeah. But I think growing up in that atmosphere with the women, it instilled a respect for women and how you should treat women.
Definitely, definitely. So if, going back to mom, if you could do it all over again, like raising two boys, how would you do it differently?
I don't even know if I would do it differently, because I think when I look at you two, I am so proud of the men you have become. I don't think I would change anything. I don't think anything. I don't know. Maybe you guys need to answer that question, because you guys came fine young men. So I don't know. Would you want to be raised? I know Dad was strict on you. And we required, you know, certain things that needed to be done and had to follow, but I don't know.
Hindsight, the only thing I could think of is we were raised pretty comfortable, and I don't think I would wish this on anybody else, but I kind of wish we had a little bit harder.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you maybe struggle a little bit, because I feel like I was spoiled.
And to me, spoiled means love. It's love.
Yeah.
And I think when parents raise their kids, they want to raise them better. So if I'm here, then I want my kids here. And then maybe you same for yours. We want to give you better than what we had. And I think that's just part of
Yeah, yeah, that's part of parenting.
Parenting.
Yeah. I think it would have been valuable to struggle early so I know how to deal with it if something comes on later on in life. Mm-hmm. I guess. But that's nitpicking. That's nitpicking.
Did you mess up?
What happened?
Oh, she touched the phone.
It's good. It's still going.
Yeah, I wouldn't change a thing.
You wouldn't?
No, not at all.
Yeah, they did a perfect job. I'm just nitpicking. I was glad to be spoiled.
A lot of great values. We were both very spoiled. Extremely, from all ends, both sides of the family.
Yeah. I just wonder, I want to keep this house in the family.
It's staying in the family.
That's good. So what advice would you give us raising kids?
A little too late
for him, I guess. It's more of a question advice for me.
I guess the first advice is to love them no matter what. Allow them to make mistakes. And when they make them, always have your arms open, you know, to receive them, you know, and to help them as much you can. But you got to allow them to make mistakes, mm-hmm. All right? You got to allow them to fall or stumble, all right? Because that's part of the learning process.
Yeah, definitely. Right? Definitely. Early on, you mentioned you met Dad in the choir. Mm-hmm. What does religion or
faith,
spirituality mean to you, and what role does it play in your life?
Well, I was always raised in church. I guess that's part of the Black culture. At least that's what I think. And coming up in church, I enjoy going to church. It's part of who I am. It's part of my heritage. If I didn't have that filter of you know, going to church, believing in God, having a spiritual connection with God, I think I would be kind of lost in the world. I'm not saying I'm the most holiest person, because you know I'm sin and fall short, but I know that my God is forgiving, and I know that I can go to Him no matter what, whatever I'm going through. He's always by my side, and He takes us through these storms and these trials and tribulations to make us stronger. Everything that I've gone through in these 58 years that I'm about to embark on is to get me to the place where I'm at. Okay, the storms, the trials, the cries, the happiness, all that, it was orchestrated by Him. I was supposed to be at that place, at this place, at that certain time. And I believe that anybody that doesn't have a religion or spiritual faith, there's a piece of them maybe missing, okay, that they need to see if they can find.
I can agree with that. So we have Melina at the table, thinking about family generations, and knowing that they may hear this recording, is there anything you want to say to future generations? Any wisdom or advice you would like to share?
Always believe in yourself, okay? Know that whatever comes about in your future, like I said, it's been orchestrated by God. There's going to be times where things are going to get a little rough, but you don't give up. You keep pressing, all right? Because there's a better day coming, all right?
You have something to say?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
When you knew that you had a baby, were you expecting it to be a girl or a boy?
Oh,
you
know, that's a good question.
I really didn't care. I just wanted it to be healthy. So when that baby boy came, I was just as excited as peas in a pot of peas. I didn't care. As long as he was healthy, had 10 fingers and 10 toes. Yeah. Mm-mm.
And last question. If you knew this was going to be our last conversation, is there anything you've never told me and Martell that you want to share with us now?
Just be who you are. Be who you are. Believe in yourself. Live for today, tomorrow, for the future, and live it to the best of your ability, because tomorrow is not promised to us. Mm. Know that Dad and I did the best we could. Yeah, and I hope I got an A or a B.
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
So as we draw to a close, I would just like to take this opportunity to say thank you for not only sharing your time and your stories with us, but most importantly, being such a great mom. Mm-hmm. You taught us so much about growing up and instilled in us the right morals and values to guide us along the way. We just want to say thank you for all you sacrificed. And now let's go get something to eat and celebrate. Happy birthday.
Love you, Mom.
Love you, Mom.
Love you so much.
I open the flashlight.